So I think it's, not only for ourselves, but the people around us, that it's just really good to be a little bit more open and honest and vulnerable with people, because no matter how much we try and make things look good on social media, we all have our stuff going on and we all struggle with things. And I think if we're a bit more open and honest about that, life would be a lot nicer.
That's Stephanie Harris, and this is the latest episode of the All Things Risk podcast. Welcome and welcome back, all you All Things Riskers. My name is Ben Cattaneo. I'm the host, the founder of the All Things Risk podcast, a show the likes of which you won't find anywhere else. We talk to people, long-form conversations. Okay, nothing special about that so far. But what we do is apply the lenses of risk, uncertainty, and resilience to try and open up our minds to new perspectives, get a better understanding of the world in which we live, and to learn some cool stuff. And to learn some cool stuff, we need some fabulous, cool guests, which we have. I work full-time in risk management. That's my day job. This is my side project. And it's a broader look at risk in just about any domain, because risk and uncertainty are integral to the world we live in and the lives that we lead. I'm going to try and keep this intro a bit short because I'm struggling with a bit of a voice issue as I recover from a cold. So I want to get into it. This episode is one to put under the banner of resilience. And my guest is Stephanie Harris. Stephanie is an author and a self-growth and progress coach. She is a South African based in New Zealand, and she specializes in supporting those experiencing grief. That could be grief caused by the loss of a friend, a loved one, or even a pet. It could also mean a major setback. And she is the author of a book called Death Expands Us, which is based on Stephanie's personal experience with the sudden loss of her brother. She basically wrote the book she wished she had when she was going through that ordeal, as you will hear. And as you've heard me say, losses will happen throughout the course of our lives. As I was speaking to Stephanie, it struck me that we often aren't taught some pretty important life skills, and dealing with loss and overcoming grief is one of those things. And as you'll hear from Stephanie, a loss could come from not just a death, but it could be the loss of a relationship, the loss of a job, and many other things. And we talk about all of that. We also get into the mind-body connection, which is something that Stephanie specializes in. And I think this is just a wonderful conversation. So I want to get into it. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Stephanie Harris. So Stephanie, welcome to the All Things Risk podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me, Ben. It's great to be on here with you and your listeners.
I think we're going to have a very good conversation and a very profound and interesting conversation. But before we get into that, you're from South Africa, but you're calling from New Zealand.
That's correct, from Auckland, New Zealand. So slightly different time to yourself. So it's Friday.
Yeah, it's not just time, but day. We got a bit of a mix up. But what took you to New Zealand?
I guess from a young age, I've just been a traveler. I moved to London, only knowing two people, spent 2 years there, a bit too cold for me. And then, I just had this strong gut feeling to be in New Zealand. I hadn't even been here on holiday or anything. And again, only just knowing two people. And yeah, just packed my bags and came, no job, no nothing. And 10 years later, here I am.
Excellent. Okay. I wanted to get into your background first, because you studied in South Africa and you studied something around the body. Is that right?
The word somatology generally throws
they're
like Soma what? So Soma means body, and Tology is a study of. So it was a 3-year, very intensive course where we basically learned fitness, nutrition, and beauty. We really went in depth. We did psychology, science, anatomy, physiology, just a lot of really useful tools for all kinds of things that life has brought me since.
We'll get into that, because I'm one of the things that we often talk about on this show is the sort of the mind-body connection, which I think is very relevant to the type of work that you do and the coaching that you do. So I think it's incredibly important, and we'll certainly come back to that one. I wanted to get into your story, and then what led you to writing your book, Death Expands Us. It's, I think, the whole concept and the whole process about grieving and dealing with death is, well, it's actually part of life, isn't it? And we'll all go through it. But if you could just give us a bit of background into how you started, or how what led you to not only writing your book but dealing with the loss of a close one.
Sure. I mean, I'd been in New Zealand, I think, 18 months, 2 years. So my brother and sister lived in the UK, and he traveled a lot for work. He was working for an investment bank in London. And, you know, like every Sunday night, I'd talk to my parents. You know, that was before things like laptops and Skype and things like that. So I'd, you know, pick up the old landline and call my mum and stuff. And I remember her saying to me that, because I knew my brother was traveling, he went to Buenos Aires. And I remember her saying that he was sick. And I think with it being like a different language in South America, it was, something seemed to be a little bit lost in translation, in that we thought it was just like gastro, when I think they meant to say gastric, as in something a little bit more serious. So I remember speaking to her probably 7 o'clock that Sunday evening. And 3 o'clock that morning, the landline rang. And as soon as it rang, I just remember my eyes like just flying open. And I had this voice in my head that said, "Brendan's dead." And I remember getting up and going to the phone, and I heard my sister's voice. And as soon as I heard her voice, I knew what was coming. I just literally couldn't get any words out of my mouth. And, you know, it was just a crazy time, because it was a foreign person in a foreign country that had passed away. So, you know, a lot of legal red tape stuff. So it took about 9 days before, like, I flew from New Zealand, my sister flew from England, and we went and collected his belongings and his body and flew back to South Africa for his funeral. And I think at that time, there's just so much going on that you kind of just in coping method. It's just like one foot in front of the other, just do whatever needs to be done. But for me, my biggest journey began when I came back to New Zealand, because I didn't have any family here. And, you know, I think unless someone's been through something similar, it can be a bit hard for people to relate. So I was really struggling to find people that I could relate to. And it's just such a massive thing. It's like literally one day you're one person, and then with the instant something happens, and the next day I just didn't feel like that person anymore. And it was just so different, and I didn't know how to be anymore. And, you know, I felt like my life had stopped and was standing still while everyone else's was carrying on. And I think just that place of, like, I was different, life looked different, and I just had no idea, like, what to do with myself. And I think that just led me on this journey of, like, trying to figure things out for me and what made sense for me and how I could maybe feel better, not just like constantly in pain and, you know, breaking down and just like feeling that loss of someone that, you know, you loved. And I think, you know, a book for me, I know I'm quite a like adventurous person. So, you know, I'll go to counselors, I'll go to mediums. Like I'm, you know, I'm quite open to stuff like that, but I know not everyone is. And I think for me, a book is appealing in that, you know, you can give it as a gift to someone, and when they're ready, they can pick it up through it. Whereas, you know, perhaps like going to a council or something, you're just sitting there with the one person and you have to start talking. So, you know, I just felt like it was something that I could have done with. I mean, you know, it's really lovely that everyone gives you flowers and stuff when someone passes, but if someone had given me a book like this, I think it would have been exceptionally helpful for me, because I was in that place where I was like, I don't understand how I'm feeling. I don't understand what to do from here. Like, how do I move forward? So I think, you know, that was a big motivation for me, in that I really felt like that was something I could have done with. Mm-hmm. And it's just a gentler approach, because we all grieve differently and we all take different time periods to work on things, or, you know, to kind of make our way through it. So I just felt like it was a more gentle approach to help people.
I've lived overseas for the bulk of my adult career, and that's, you know, one of the things that I've from time to time have thought about is, what if you get that phone call in the middle of the night that something's happened? When I was living in South Korea, I had a roommate who's an American, and he got that phone call that his father passed away from a heart attack. And I've often wondered what would I do in those circumstances? Because if you're not close to family, it probably does feel very isolating. And I don't know, did you feel like, well, I should just go back home for a while?
I guess I didn't feel that like that kind of feeling to go back to South Africa, because I guess I felt like this is where I needed to be. But you know, like when my sister had my niece and she was really sick, and I thought I may have to fly to the UK in case things didn't go very well there, you know, I was on a South African passport and I needed a visa to the UK, and it was in the middle of the night and there was nowhere I could call.
Oh, gosh.
It was a very stressful night and I didn't sleep. And I think, you know, that's something that, you know, yes, things have changed a lot and we can just hop on Skype or hop on FaceTime and stuff like that. But, you know, sometimes there are situations where, you know, it can be really hard when you're far apart or overseas from the people you love.
Hmm. Yeah, you've described this. I mean, your book starts off, this is your crucible event.
Yeah.
And the way you describe it just now, it's, you know, there's this clear sort of pre and post. Is that what you mean by crucible event?
I think for me, it was that turning point where, like, something happens in your life and you literally are no longer the same anymore. I think before that, it was kind of like, I think I slightly knew that I was a bit intuitive, and but you kind of don't really pay attention to it. And, you know, just same old status quo, like going along with life. But I think with that event, it literally almost like pushes or forces you into a place where you're like, okay, that status quo stuff is not going to work anymore. I like, something different is going to have to happen now. And I think that's what it was for me, in that, you know, then I started to question things more. I started to look at life differently, and, you know, just because life and time is so precious, you know, do I want to be spending it with people that don't leave me feeling very good or don't treat me very good, or, you know, those kind of things? I think it just forces you to start looking at that, whereas before you could probably live a little bit more in denial, like just blissfully there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's spot on. I know you do work with clients and you do coaching, and what you experienced was a very sort of sudden and unexpected loss. Other people are dealing with family members, friends who might have might have a terminal illness, or you know, lose a loved one who are, you know, who's relatively old. And you lost your brother. He was quite young. Yeah. Is there a difference, do you think, in the grieving process depending on what happens and transpires?
I think with grief, there's just no rules. I mean, I've had some clients where, you know, they're maybe 20, 30 years older than me, and they've lost a parent. But because they were exceptionally close to that parent, it was probably as painful for them as it was for me losing a sibling. So I don't think necessarily saying, you know, like if someone's older, you kind of expect them to pass away, that may be easier and stuff. I don't think that's the case. I think it's the relationship you had with the person and how we deal with grief in general. You know, I think when I was filling in a form where they were like asking me what's one of the most difficult things with what you do, and, you know, I wrote on there is that, you know, sometimes even though people are saying they want help, like to try and get out of their grief and stuff, mm-hmm. it's not necessarily the case. You know, some people are comfortable in that space, and it's something familiar and it's something that they know. So, you know, I think it's very much our personality and how we probably deal with life in general, not just grief.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Could we maybe talk a bit about the grieving process? We often hear about sort of the five stages of grief, but I wanted to get your perspective on the, you know, the need and the utility, what do we need to do when, you know, we're going through that? What are the, I guess, those early days of trying to make sense of the big change, the big loss that's occurred?
I've written about it in my blogs many times, and I've spoken to many people about it in that, you know, I think when whoever came up with the whole five stages of grief, you know, that was many decades ago, and I think life in general has changed. You know, I mean, you, like in America now with all the school shootings and all these crazy things that are happening in our life. So I think, you know, there's some things that we can take away from that, but at the same time, I think life has changed, and you know, the stresses we have and the things we expect to cope and deal with is very different. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, the biggest thing I would say is for people just to be gentle on themselves and to not judge everything, because I think we're just so used to judging ourselves, judging others, and it's, you know what, if you want to spend all day in bed crying, like, don't judge yourself. That's what you need to do. And I think also the biggest thing for me was, because I was struggling to find people to relate to, I felt like I was the only one feeling that way. I felt like, you know, is this bad that I'm feeling this way? Like, should I still be feeling this way 6 months after? And because then it just makes it worse, because then you're questioning yourself and you're judging yourself. So I think that's why I promote, like, you know, finding a community that can speak that same language, because then you'll know that you're not alone. Other people are going through the same thing, thinking the same things, feeling the same things. So I think for me, it's definitely just don't judge the process, and also don't have that expectation. You know, someone I was talking to, they said they didn't go through, like, say, the anger part of the five stages of grief. So I think if you're just focusing on that, then it's almost like you're forcing yourself to maybe go through what someone's saying that you have to go through, whereas instead of just not judging it and actually allowing yourself to go through it, our body and our mind is an amazing, amazing thing. It will tell you exactly what you need and when you need it. So yes, there is useful things from those five stages, but I think we're also very designed to know ourselves very well and to know what we need. So listening to yourself to be very useful.
Is there a timeline that is common? Because I've heard you talk about this, that, you know, should I feel better after a year, 2 years? You know, what should the timeline be? What do you tell people about that?
I'm pretty sure if I asked my parents that question versus asking myself that question, you know, losing a child, losing a sibling, losing a parent, it's all very, very different. And I, you know, that's like when we were putting my book together, I really didn't like the word closure, because I'm like, what is closure? I mean, I'm never going to forget that he was my brother or he was in my life. You know, yes, I may be at a point now where I don't feel like I have to think about him all day, every day, and, you know, feel guilty if I don't. So I don't think, I don't know about timeline, because, I mean, I think it just changes and evolves as time goes on. I mean, like, there'll still be times where I feel sad and I miss him. You know, it just may not be like in the beginning stages where, you know, it was really like breaking me as such, if that's the right word to use. So, I mean, again, I think it's dependent on like your closeness to the person, how the person died. I mean, I can't even imagine what it would be like, say, if someone murdered Brendan versus it just be natural causes. So there's so many factors that make it up. And again, our personality and how we deal with that. So again, I just don't want people to get fixated on these words or these terms, because, yeah, it means different things for different people.
I like that approach because first of all, I think there's an element of self-compassion in all of it. And you just have to deal with it. Just look at yourself and look at it honestly and deal with it, as opposed to, well, you know, it's been whatever, 6 months, 9 months, whatever, I should feel better. it doesn't really help, does it?
Well, I think, you know, I went with my friend to watch that movie Love, Simon last night. And I think one of the things that I learned in that movie where he said, like, why do you, you know, gay or lesbian people have to come out? It's not like I had to go tell my parents that I like men, you know. it gave me a new perspective. And I think it really taught me that I think we can get caught up in what someone wrote in some science book 10 years ago, like the whole five stages of grief, like you have to eat three meals a day. I think we can just really get caught up in these concepts that other people brought up or that society thinks that we need to follow. And it doesn't necessarily mean it fits for us and is what's right for us.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And one of the things I've thought about as well is the whole concept of, well, I've heard you talk about this, but also, you know, masculinity as, you know, as a male who, you know, stiff upper lip and we shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't cry, we shouldn't show our emotions, all of this kind of stuff. And I, you know, increasingly think that that's nonsense. And, you know, on the other hand, we don't want to be, you know, we need to move forward. We need to be, you know, we don't want to be victims and let you know, your, you know, the crucible event, you know, define us in the wrong way. But, you know, I think there is a process that I think we all have to recognize and go through. Is that, would you be in agreement with that? Or do you have a slightly different take on those things?
I mean, for me, I think, you know, again, as I was touching on before, like, who came up with the fact that men shouldn't show their feelings? Mm. Like, who decided that? Yeah. You know, it just seemed ridiculous for me because at the end of the day, we're all human, we're all people. And for me, you know, maybe growing up where I did or just being very observant, when you watch people that hold a lot of stuff inside, if they don't explode at some point, it comes out on a physical level, like in illness or something like that. And I just don't see how that can be good for anyone, never mind the person, but the people around them. You know, if a father or a husband is not expressing how he's feeling, you know, that will come out in different ways that will then affect, like, say, his marriage or his children. Same with women. So I think it's, you know, not only for ourselves, but the people around us that – it's just really good to be a little bit more open and honest and vulnerable with people, because no matter how much we try and make things look good on social media, we all have our stuff going on and we all struggle with things. And I think if we're a bit more open and honest about that, life would be a lot nicer.
Yeah, absolutely. I talked about this my last podcast episode, but I had a run-in with a very angry driver while I was on my bike. And afterwards, I just thought, you know, this guy was taking something. I don't know what it was, but he was taking something from before and at the slightest bit of provocation explodes. And that there's a cause there, and don't know what's going on with this guy, but it's better to deal with the stuff that you have to deal with as opposed to just bottling it up. I know you talk about this balloon in water metaphor, which I really like, and wondering if you could share with my listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's that whole thing of like trying to push a balloon underwater. No matter how much you try and push out, at some point it's going to find its way to the surface. Similar with a boiling pot with a lid on. You know, like when it's boiling away, that lid's going to keep lifting up and moving around with the boiling water. And I just think that's what we need to be mindful of as people, you know, just trying to bottle things up, not talking about it, trying to be strong the whole time. It's just not possible. We're all human. You know, we all have to let things out. You know, for some people that could be going for a bike ride. For other people that could be going to a boxing class. And I think that's why I keep advocating. It's so important to know yourself, because if you know yourself, you'll know the types of things that work for you and that can help you. So I love going for massages and treating myself, like having my hair done. So I know that works for me and that helps calm me down and bring me kind of back to reality. So, you know, I think we just need to stop focusing on these words and phrases or the way we think we should be. Like, you know, if you're a man, you have to be strong, or if you're a woman, you have to be this. I just think we focus too much on that instead of what's actually right for us and what actually makes us happy and healthy, functioning people in society.
Yeah, that's cool. It's also, have you ever watched the series Seinfeld?
Probably a very long time ago, but I have heard of this.
So it just popped into my head, but there's an episode when one of the characters, whenever he gets upset, he just says, "Serenity now, serenity now." And one of the other characters says, "It doesn't really do anything. It's just keeping it all bottled up, you know, serenity now, insanity later." So, it strikes me as something similar there. But one of the things I also wanted to explore with you, in some cultures, when people die, they actually, They don't just grieve and, well, I suppose it's a form of grieving, but, you know, they don't just cry and, you know, feel sad, but they also dance and, you know, laugh and kind of celebrate the person's life. And I it strikes me as that's also pretty healthy.
I think it's beautiful. I mean, my sister and I, you know, kind of wanted to have a wake after my brother's funeral because mm-hmm. he was young and we really wanted to celebrate his life. So, you know, we kind of did the whole church and the tea and the cake in the hall next door mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. maybe older generations that's more familiar with that. But, you know, we really wanted the wake because it's, you know, yes, it's sad and it's hard, but at the same time, isn't it nice to celebrate that you had that person? Mm-hmm. Like I had him for 33 years and, you know, what that person brought to his life. And, you know, a lot of his colleagues flew from around the world and they were sharing stories with us. And for me, it was really nice because I got to hear a different side of my brother. You know, I mean, I didn't work with him. I was his sibling. So hearing these stories and like the things that he did, it was really nice for me. So I think it can be a very healing experience if we want and we allow it to be.
Yeah, I think perhaps you describe sort of, you know, the older generation, you know, it has to be, I suppose, everything in black and dour and everything. And I think that's part of the process. But I think you're right. When we think about that person, you're thinking about how they actually live their life as opposed to their death.
But I guess that's also why I dedicated a whole chapter of like, yes. how do you navigate grieving family and friends? Because yes. it can get very tricky. And,
okay, let's talk about that then. Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. Yeah.
I mean, so many clients I've had, it seems to be the hardest part for them. You know, people grieve differently, how they want things to be differently, like if the person's going to be buried or ashes, like where's the ashes going to go. They can be very complicated things. And when you really love someone and you each have a very strong point of view on think is best, you know, it can be hard, and you can only hope at the end of the day that, you know, you all raw, you all hurting, that together you can compromise. And, you know, I was grateful for that, you know, how we did the church and the whole tea and cake thing for the older generation. But then, you know, like our parents came with us and we did the wake and stuff. They didn't stay very long because it was a very traumatic day, but you know, like we were able to kind of have something for all of us on that day to celebrate him. But, you know, unfortunately, life is life and family's family. And, you know, it can be a very tricky one. I mean, I know many of my clients have had very hard times with family after someone's died, you know, especially if, like, say, one of their children's married and that person's kind of having their bit to say. And it can really get tricky. So, you know, for me, I felt like it was really something we needed to be honest about, because pretty much 9 out of 10 of my clients were struggling with something relating to that.
And what's the one of the more common, I suppose, pieces of advice that you generally give to people struggling with that?
I guess each situation's very unique. You know, like one of my clients, she moved away from South Africa and she was here with her child. So, you know, it was a little bit tricky. It's not like she could just say, like, okay, you're being really unreasonable, like, you know, you're not treating me very well and stuff, and just cut that person off. I mean, each situation is very unique. But I know for sure something that I've learned a lot about in the last few years is that, you know, you can still love people and you can still care about people and do things for people, but it doesn't mean that you have to sacrifice yourself. And it doesn't mean that you don't have to have boundaries. Like, we're not doormats. You know, you can still speak to people and say and express how you feel in a nice way, but by also having your boundaries and respect for yourself.
Sound advice. Can we talk a little bit about the sort of mind-body piece? Because you talked about illness, and it strikes me as when someone goes through something, something like that, when someone's grieving, there are all kinds of things. People sometimes, they don't eat, or they overeat, or there's probably a whole range of things in which, the body kind of manifests a number of stressors that the mind and the psyche are feeling. So I'd love to hear your take on the sort of the mind-body piece of grief.
Absolutely. I mean, like I was saying before, our mind and our body's an amazing, I'm trying to think of the right word, like organism. In that, I found for me, I was doing all this like mental and emotional work. So I felt, I'd really progressed on that. But say, for example, I go to a yoga class. I literally felt like I was 100 years old and could barely keep a pose. And when I did volunteer work and, I'd massage the female clients that we had on those volunteer days, pretty much every single one, when I asked them what area they wanted me to massage, would say their back. And it would be safe to say that it was really not in a good place. It was really stiff and tight. And it just became clear to me that we forget that we are in a physical body. So we may do all this mental, emotional, spiritual work, but our body's still the one that's carrying us here on our journey. And I think it can be very easy to overlook. We see it often with, maybe women that become mothers and just constantly busy looking after everyone else. It's easy to forget ourselves and to forget your body. So for me, it was really important to make people aware that we have to look at it at all levels, not just the mental and the emotional side of it. And I have seen it with people, that have gone through very traumatic experiences or perhaps not very good at expressing their emotions, that they end up with things that's not very good, like terminal illnesses and stuff like that. And I don't know, just the amount of people you see that happening to, it just didn't feel like it could be a coincidence. I just felt like there is definitely something more to this. And, we really need to be mindful to take care of our physical body if we still want to be here.
Mm-hmm. I guess this leads me on to my next areas of wanting to get your expertise. And that's if one of our friends or even acquaintances is dealing with a loss. I always find it difficult, awkward, and I think a lot of people do, and as a result they avoid the conversation. When I was growing up, I had a friend who lost his mother, and I almost never used the word mother around him. It was when I was hanging out or whatever, I'd try not to talk about my mom, because it would, I thought, oh, it would make him think about his mom, I didn't know. I didn't, what do I say? What do I not say? It can be very challenging.
I think it's human nature. We all want to avoid things that make us feel uncomfortable or uneasy. And, I found the same. I felt like people were so scared to use the word death around me. It would make me totally fall apart. And even if I did cry, you're fine after I cried. I think for me, if in doubt, ask. Because as we were talking about before, I didn't know how I was going to grieve or how I was going to go through it until I was actually in it. Even if someone asked me 2 years before, how are you going to deal with this? You have no idea until you're actually in it. I did find, people would be like, let me know if you need anything. And at times where, I wanted to be vulnerable and explain how I was feeling, you can sometimes get that deer in the headlights look, or people kind of start avoiding you. So I think for me, it's you can't guess how that person's going to deal with grief. So if in doubt, just say to them, please let me know what you need. If you just want me to come around and sit there and not say a word, then I'm happy to do that. If you go watch a funny movie, we can do that too, because sometimes they may not even know what they need themselves, because you're just in such a strange place and trying to make sense of everything that you may not actually know what you need until it's actually happening. So And I think as humans, we feel like we always need to be doing something. Mm-hmm. But even if someone just came around and sat with me, you know, that I wasn't alone and like all these crazy thoughts going through my head alone, that would have been helpful in itself. So I think just don't put pressure on ourselves that you have to do all these grand, amazing gestures or just be so scared to say the wrong thing, in that we're all human. And honestly, I think the person wouldn't really care that much if we accidentally used the word death or mother. I think it would be more harder for them if we totally avoided them and they felt alone and isolated.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's a good point. I think it harkens back to your purpose in writing your book. You know, the flowers are nice, but you needed more, right? Or you needed something perhaps a little different, or maybe just somebody to come around and hang out with, or whatever. This book that explains all of these wonderful strategies and things.
I mean, I had a friend that said they didn't want to do anything that kept identifying them with the death. Like, they just wanted to go and join a hiking group and go mm-hmm. for hikes and not mm-hmm. have to talk about it the whole time. So that's why I'm saying we don't really know what people need until they're actually in it. And just because, you know, that could have been something I needed doesn't mean it's what something someone else needs. So for me, it's like, if in doubt, just ask. And I think they would appreciate that a lot, instead of just be like, if you need anything, and then disappearing. So
yeah. And I suppose there's also the element of, you know, I think an increasingly so in our modern world is that we don't really want to talk about death. We don't want to think about it, because, you know, if we start talking to a friend who's had a loss, well, that actually, then I have to start to think about, well, how would I react? And, well, yes, I suppose I'll have to deal with this at some point. I suppose I'll die at some point, you know, and that's, that I think most of us don't want to deal with that. I think the vast majority of people would like to, you know, watch movies on Netflix or whatever. So I think that's also an element of what's going on, perhaps.
That, and I think also, you know, maybe we just need to become mindful in that, you know, it's becoming a society where everything is very digital and perhaps not quite as connected as it used to be. I mean, when I was a child, like, I don't remember watching lots of TV. We used to go to my cousin's house and play board games and stuff. And I think we just need to become mindful of that too. You know, I think that's what I was trying to say before, in that it can be very easy for words to come out of our mouth, like, let me know if you need anything, or I'm sorry. I think it just becomes second nature. Whereas now I try and be really mindful when I say it. Like, if I know I'm going to be busy and I cannot catch up with someone, I'm not going to say, let's catch up. I'm just becoming more mindful of that. And I think especially when it comes to grief, because if you say to someone, let me know if you need anything, then that's what they're going to take it as, you know, like, if you need me, I'll be there. So I think it's also the fact of, you know, talking about it with someone else makes us, or forces us, to go, I'm going to have to go through this, and I really don't want to go through this pain.
Yes.
So the fact, with the way life is and how digital everything is, and I mean, I see it now, like, if people want to take photos, everyone's starting to pull the dark face, and I'm like, can we just take normal pictures? So we also just need to be mindful of that side, especially when it comes to things that we're all going to have to go through, things that are real and vulnerable for all of us.
We're living in there's so many contradictions, more contradictions, and, you know, we're in that, we're so well connected, and you talked about before Skype and things, you know, talking to your parents every Sunday, and now we can, you know, message them every day. If you want, you can call them every day on Skype or whatever, but whatever, your friends all around the world, but, you know, we're seemingly less connected to one another. We're not having those in-depth conversations. Everything is very short, and it's all about the post, the Facebook post, or the Instagram picture, or whatever. And we're not really making those types of human connections, which is concerning. We're not, not just in terms of dealing with grief, but just dealing with life. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's something, you know, I know I talk about it in my blogs and that, which I think is really important to understand, that grief is not only death. Right. You know, it could be relationships, loss of a job, health. They're so, you know, I've had changes in my health and it's really hard to deal with. And, you know, I know for me that I really struggle with, you know, the part of modern life where everything's very surface and very superficial, because I'm the type of person that really craves a bit more deep and meaningful. And, you know, in that world where everything is very, like, you know, surface, it can be hard. And that in itself can bring people grief because, you know, you're trying to find that connection with people, but it doesn't mean that everyone else is looking for that connection. So I think, you know, keeping in mind that grief doesn't just relate to death. There is many, many other things that it can relate to. I mean, I got my dog 2-3 weeks before my brother died. Mm-hmm. I'm dreading the day he dies. Like, right. You know, that's going to be horrible for me. So, yeah, I think we just need to be mindful that it's not just death.
Yeah, I mean, I lost a dog a couple of years ago, and it was very difficult. You know, and their lives are so compressed in terms of, you know, they're around for whatever 10 to 14 years or depending on the breed and things. And so in some respects, it provides a little bit of enhanced meaning because he has fewer days with us than we do on this planet. You know, in the one sense is a positive because it, you know, makes me want to, you know, enjoy every sort of moment. But at the same time, it's a loss, right? And I don't know physically, I think, you know, losing our dog, I'm married, but we don't have kids. We just had a dog. Physically, in terms of the grieving process, pretty sure it was just as severe as losing a human being.
Oh, I mean, I mean, just the thought of something happened to him, I'm like in a crying mess. And I think for me, the biggest thing I've learned with him is, you know, animals are amazing in that they actually teach us proper unconditional love. And as we were saying, you know, with the way life and society is changing, you know, a lot of times things come with conditions. And, you know, animals don't do that. You know, I can come home and I can be grumpy and he'll still be like excited, wagging his tail, wanting to love me. Or, you know, I can be sad and he always loves me. And I think, you know, maybe that's why people feel so connected with their pets, because isn't that something that everyone wants? Is that like just pure unconditional love in a world where a lot of things are based on conditions? Like, you have to do this for me, then I'll do that for you. Or, yeah, I just think that's part of, like, we're missing that deep and meaningful, which seems to be changing.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I think I fully agree with you. Yeah, pets are amazing. And I think we can, there are also some things that we can do potentially to create, well, I'm curious, I'll turn that into a question then. What can we do to kind of turn our interactions with others into something a little bit more meaningful?
I mean, I think I've noticed it with myself. When I have the courage to be a bit more vulnerable, I notice it with other people. Mm-hmm. It's almost like we're giving other people permission to be vulnerable and also let out stuff. I think also you need to be mindful that, you know, who you share things with. You know, there are people that you are going to feel closer with than others. And, you know, we all have different relationships. Like, sometimes you just have a friend that, you know, you go to the movies with, or, you know, one that you go on hikes with and stuff. So first of all, I think it's defining who you want to have those deep and meaningfuls with, and who you feel safe that you can trust those deep and meaningfuls, like entrusted with them. And then I think, you know, having the courage to be vulnerable, because so many times when I've written blogs about things that's happening for me, the amount of people that message me afterwards saying, oh, like, thank goodness I've got the same happening. It's so nice to hear you say it and stuff. And I think it's that thing of, like, we're all going through it, but we're all too scared to say it. And as soon as one person says it, we're all like, oh, thank goodness, it's not just me that's crazy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Those are some great tips. I want to get into the whole concept of death expands us, so that coming through the grieving process, we can create a stronger, more powerful, positive outcome from dealing with grief. And I'm wondering how you approach that in some of the sort of the key themes from your book around that.
It the name came to me in the middle of the night, and I just had this image of a balloon where, you know, a balloon can inflate and then fly away to like higher possibilities, or a balloon can inflate and burst. And that was kind of the image I had at night, and it just made me think that not only with death, but any hard situation
right.
in life,
yes.
where we're required to have resilience and strength, I think it's that point of you can either let it expand you and you can move on to better possibilities, or you can let it expand you and make you burst. And, you know, I've mentioned it many times, like if we have nothing else, we have choice. You know, there's a lot of people in the world, like if you listen to people like Tony Robbins, Oprah, they've all had some really tough times in their life. And it's, you know, what made them so resilient to go through those tough times but still come out really well on the other side. And in coming out on the other side, helping other people to do the same, because, you know, it's wonderful if we can learn a lot of things. Like, I'm very good at signing up to all these courses and learning things, but what is it really if we can't share it or help other people to do the same with their own life? So, I mean, yeah, I think it's like I was saying before, you know, words can come out of our mouth easily. Like, you know, I want you to help me, and people can go from one counselor to the next coach to the next counselor, like constantly looking. But it's, do you really want things to change?
Right.
And I think that is, will be a turning point for people. Do you want it to change, or are you okay where you are? Are you comfortable? Does it feel safe? Or because change is scary and change is not always easy, and it does require you to keep pushing. And sometimes when you're really going through a hard time, like grief or death, do we really have the energy to like keep pushing and going through more harder stuff? So there is a time and a place. You know, I took a few years where I wasn't going through as much stuff, and then I really started to push myself to grow. But I think it's also my personality. I just don't think I would have been able to stay with the same status quo. I think it was in my personality to want to do something different, to want to create something good that can help other people so that they don't feel the way that I did. But I definitely think it's deciding, do you want to do something with this, or are you happy to stay where you are? And either way, it doesn't mean it's good or it's bad. It's just doing what's right for you.
Yeah, I think what you also are saying is you do need to do a bit of work before, you know, it's not like the next day end a relationship. Maybe for some people, you know, lose their job or a close relationship or whatever, and then the next day, oh, pff, you know, on to the next thing. I don't think that's most of us. I think we all have to process what's going on. But, you know, at some point, you're right. I think that the concept of choice is very powerful.
I mean, my friends that I have that's also into self-development and wanting to like be the best version of themselves, like we often joke, we're like, it feels like freaking Everest. Like, you think you've just worked through one thing. Oh, it will come back in a few months again. Then you have to work through it again. It's just like this onion. You just keep pulling away the layers. And you know, I think that's why I'm saying like the resilience, because it's not easy to work on yourself and to look at things that need changing, and it can be tiring and, you know, at times a bit disheartening. So I think, you know, it's something that you really have to want to be able to keep going, because, you know, it can be challenging.
Yeah, I always liken resilience to a skill. You know, it's something that we need to train and to do on a repeated basis, so that when, well, things will happen regardless. I mean, that's a given. So we get used to that process of working through it. But it isn't instantaneous, right? So it's
that would be lovely.
Yeah, that would be. But you know, sometimes we think it ought to be, or not just instantaneous, but, you know, going back to that point. Well, oh gee, it's been 6 months since, you know, this happened. You're still snap out of it. I mean, that's probably not a piece of advice that we could give to someone.
Especially when you're an impatient person like me, and when you want it to happen, you want it to happen now. So, you know, that in itself is challenging. And I got some amazing feedback or advice last year in that, you know, sometimes we can get lessons or things can happen to us to learn something from it. Like, you know, what do we need to learn from this? And then other times it can come up because it's helping us to actually anchor in the changes we've made. So, for example, when I actually learned, like maybe 2 years ago, what boundaries were and how to actually start implementing this, I would notice things come up in my life where I actually had the opportunity to practice this. Mm. Because again, like, you know, just learning it is one thing, but actually practicing it, like you're saying, like learning that skill is something else, you know, especially with boundaries and especially when people aren't used to you having boundaries, you can have a lot of resistance in the beginning to be like, okay, that doesn't work for me. You know, you just, you know, standing up for yourself a bit more. So, you know, it does take time to practice and learn and grow, and not every situation is going to be the same. So you'll learn something from each unique experience.
Yeah, that's a great example of implementing boundaries and then just looking for those opportunities to practice. Yeah, that's that really is a great example. It does take, again, it takes some inner work, right? It's not something that that we do overnight. And like anything, I'm such a believer now in just practice. I mean, it's just boring and repetitive, but, you know, all kinds of things, not just physical, but just, you know, not getting worked up over a certain thing. Or and I suppose when things don't go our way, it's an opportunity to, like, if we get into a big shouting match with a colleague or something, there's an opportunity in that to just understand, you know, ooh, what the hell was that all about? And to think about how you might want to manage that situation better in the future.
And I think also with something like that, you know, it touches on the grief side of things, where I was saying, you know, like, it teaches you what's worth it and what's not worth it anymore. So, you know, sometimes, I guess, like for me, from a young age, like I would, you know, you probably keep going prove that you're right or something like that. Whereas now there will be occasions where I'm like, I kind of know where this is going to go.
Yeah.
And right. I don't see that person like changing how they're viewing it. So I think sometimes it's like, what battles are worth fighting and what's easier just to walk away from?
Right. I fully agree with you. And increasingly that applies to the use of social media and you know, getting into arguments on Facebook this sort of thing. It's not going to go anywhere. Just walk away.
I actually have a great example. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, go for it. Yep.
I think it was last October, had a first time in my 35 years, accidentally did a minor fender bender hit into the back of someone. The thing was, the lady was driving and her husband was in the passenger seat. And so afterwards, they were saying that his face hit the dashboard and he broke a tooth and that he needed to pay $600 for it. So now I had to practice boundaries. And it was even harder because I knew, like, the accident was my fault. But at the same time, it was like, yes, the accident's my fault and I've taken full responsibility for that. I've done all the insurance stuff, blah, 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 blah. But you're not being honest, because if he's wearing his seatbelt, there's no way he's going to hit the dashboard. And it was like standing up for myself and going, I take responsibility for the action, but you're not being honest and I'm not going to pay that money because, like, you're totally taking advantage of me here. And she just kept like emailing me and sending me all these photos, like, of the bill that I had to pay. And part of me just wanted to email back, like, message her back and just be like, come on, like, stop your BS.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I just stopped for a second and I was like, why? Like, I know she's not being honest, because it's not even scientifically possible for his head to hit the dashboard if he seatbelt on. And I'm like, what would texting back saying all that do? Like, what would it achieve? Like, she's obviously trying really hard to get something out of me. What would I achieve by actually texting back and going off at her? Like, nothing.
Yeah.
And that was really hard for me because I'm used to always, like, texting back to, like, prove my point.
Yes.
And I didn't text back and I just left it. And it was not easy for me to do, but it really taught me something valuable in that, like, why did I have to prove myself to her? Like, I knew she wasn't being honest.
Absolutely. And all it's going to do is work you up, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're just not going to, you know, you're not going to sleep well and there's no point, but it's very difficult. And increasingly we can get into these little conflict situations over all sorts of things. And it's such a skill to just be able to know when to walk away from that and not take the bait. I find meditation is very useful for those things.
You have to dig deep. You have to dig very deep.
Yes.
And I think it's that thing of, like, you know, what's worth it? Like, really, what am I going to get out of this by joining in on this? Yes. And just, I mean, I think knowing, you know, your boundaries and, you know, what's in it for you. Like, is this my ego trying to prove that I'm right? Or is this actually going to solve anything? Or, you know, those kind of things.
Well, that's also part of resilience. And I was just saying that, so I try and meditate every day. I don't always successfully do, but I do notice that when I do it regularly, I don't give into those types of things. And I feel just generally better because I can kind of see, oh, this is what's going on. I'm getting all worked up over this thing. Now let it go. And if I'm, it could be, you know, that I haven't meditated. Also could be that I'm just tired, but, you know, I might give in to the temptation of firing back, and then it just escalates into something not very useful, which is not being very resilient. So
someone, you know, told me that you don't have to answer something or give give an answer or things right then and there.
Yeah, we have a choice, right? Yeah, and sometimes it doesn't. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, go for it.
Perfectly okay to go, you know what, like, I need some time to think about that. I'll come back to you in a few days, because, you know, initially it could just be all emotion. And then when we calm down, we could see things differently. So, you know, when someone said that to me, I was like, oh, that would make life easier. I probably react on the spot. And, you know, to be able to just go, okay, like, or especially when, like we're saying, it's a very digital age. So if it's emails or text, which is harder to interpret anyway, you know, just to put the phone down and walk away and go do something and then come back to it. Because, you know, it can be very easy in the heat of the moment to have things get out of hand, when if we're just a little bit calmer or took a bit more time, it wouldn't necessarily escalate to that level.
Yeah, absolutely. And the problem is, you know, everyone expects a response within an hour or something, you know, from an instant message. And this is, and we stress ourselves out with some of this stuff that, you know, whether it's an email or an instant message, you know, oh gosh, now I have to respond to this person. Not necessarily. Or you can, as you say, send them a holding response, say, oh, you know, I'll get back to you, in the next few days or something like that.
I think it also doesn't give us time to actually take a breather and see what it is for us. I've had many experiences where, like, someone will say something or expect something of me, and I'll just reply, but in my gut, that's not what I wanted to reply. But I think because it was like in the moment, on the spot, had to reply then and there, something came out of my mouth. But that's not what my gut was feeling. And I think we just need that bit of time to allow ourselves to go, okay, what is my gut feeling here? Do I think this is a good idea? Is it a bad idea? Should I try it? Shouldn't I try it? Because when we're doing those instant replies, we're not actually giving ourselves time to hear what our gut's trying to tell us.
That's very, very true. Could maybe you provide some high-level strategies or tools, perhaps to some of my listeners who might be going through the grieving process of something or other? They might, as you say, they might have lost someone close to them, or they might just have, you know, they might have just left a relationship. They might have lost a job. They might have, as you say, there could be all kinds of reasons why someone might be grieving. They might have lost a pet, you know. What are for somebody who might have just experienced that very recently, perhaps, what would you suggest that they do?
I think in those initial stages, you know, when you have so many emotions and so many thoughts going in and out of your head, I think one of the most valuable things you can do for yourself is find someone that you can really bounce things off. Because sometimes when it's in your head, especially if you kind of just stay at home and don't really interact with a lot of people, it can really become a lot worse than what it is. So I think, you know, like, I found someone that I go to when I have, like, stuff that I want to kind of process and stuff. And I find sometimes when you're actually speaking it aloud, you're really giving yourself the answer. But it's when you're on your own and you just, like, everything's going through your head and all your emotions, like, it can come a little bit of a whirlwind. And like I was saying before, I think another one is, you know, just finding people that can relate and that speak that grief language. Because, you know, my brother's company was amazing. They paid for us to go see a counselor after he died. Lovely lady, valuable stuff. However, I didn't feel that she could relate to what I was going through. You know, I needed someone that could kind of understand like what I'd been through, the things I was feeling and thinking. So I think it's really valuable to find people that get it, because if someone hasn't been through it, like trying to talk to them about it, it doesn't have the same, I don't know what the right word is, you know, like I don't have children myself. So, you know, talking to my friends about like what it's like to have children, like I can try and understand, but I don't think truly get it because I've not experienced it myself. So, you know, for me, finding if it's a group or whatever it is, you know, just people that can at least speak that same grief language so that you know you're not alone, that what you're thinking and feeling is normal, and that you're not the only one thinking and feeling those things, that other people go through those same things.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard you say this before, but there's nothing wrong with asking for help, right?
Again, I think it goes back to that thing of what we're led to believe, like, you know, men should cry, you shouldn't ask for help, it makes you vulnerable and weak, blah, blah, all that nonsense. Like, it's rubbish. Like, you know, I've for many years done a lot of things on my own, and it's impossible to do everything on your own all the time. Like, we, that's the point of having friends and family, is to be able to help each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I know we need to wrap it up shortly, but I'd love to just talk about your coaching, the coaching that you do with people.
Yeah.
What type of work do you do for your clients? And similarly, if any of my listeners are interested in connecting with you, how they might be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, the place where I have everything listed is my website, so stephanieharriscoaching.com. I mean, it's got my email, my phone number, Skype, all that kind of stuff. It's also got all my blogs and useful resources like that. And, you know, in terms of coaching, you know, as we've spoken about on this call itself, is that one size does not fit all. And I think you have to be adaptable and flexible to see what someone is having difficulty with and ways that you can help them. So, I mean, there are certain things that you can, that can help in general, but for me, it's really being present with that person and listening to what they're saying. So many times I find for like good 10, 15 minutes, my client's talking and I'm just listening. And I think by not interrupting and just actually sitting there, which can be hard because you want to give input and feedback, that in itself can open up a lot of things and lead to different things that they, because sometimes we can say what we think the person wants to hear, but when you let someone actually talk and you're actually quiet, because, you know, if someone's quiet, you feel nervous and you have to talk a bit more, that sometimes that can allow the real stuff out, like things that are really there for them. So I think that's something that's, you know, very important for me when I see clients, is like learning how to just listen and be quiet, because at some point the real stuff's going to come out. Because, you know, when people are nervous and they're sitting in front of someone, it will just be the lighter stuff in the beginning. But if you just quiet a little bit and you let them say what they need to say, eventually what's really going on deep inside for them will come up, and then you just need to be there to support and help them along with that.
And where do you see it all going? Where would you like it to go in terms of your coaching business and the coaching work you do?
I actually spoke about it with a lovely colleague of mine in Australia, in that we think retreats would be amazing for this. You know, like I was saying, when I came back, I felt like my life had stopped and everyone else's life went on. I was struggling to relate to people. And we just thought retreats would be wonderful. You know, being in a space where other people get you, but you can also do things that help relax you and, you know, just bring you back to reality and not kind of stuck in your head and stuff like that. I think that would be something that would be very beneficial and beautiful for people. You know, just completely separate space. Not your home, not like family's homes, you know, not the usual places you are, but something totally different where you're surrounded by people that understand what you've been through, speak the same language, and just a space where you can let things out.
Yeah, that sounds great. And for my listeners who are interested, where can they find you?
My website has got everything, but in terms of like with coaching, it can be done on Skype, Zoom, FaceTime. I've done that with clients before. In terms of my book, I mean, through Amazon, there's a link on my website, or, you know, if anyone's here in New Zealand, I post people our copies as well. And social media, I've got like Facebook, Twitter, all those LinkedIn kind of pages. So I'm often posting stuff on there so that people can have resources to help them.
Very cool. Okay, well, we've covered a lot of ground, but was there anything that you wanted to mention that we didn't get a chance to discuss?
Nothing's coming to mind. I think we had lots of good conversations about things that I think a lot of people would definitely relate to.
Yeah, very cool. Stephanie, this was great. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to me, and I'm sure my listeners will find this very valuable. And I wish you all the best, and let's stay in touch.
I mean, I'm very grateful that you had me on your show, and especially at the hour for you.
No, it's fine. We've, time zones sometimes, it's not just a time zone issue. It's a day issue. So, happy Friday while it's Thursday evening over here. But thank you so much.
I'm really grateful. And I'm also grateful that you are willing to go into some of the stuff that we discussed, because, you know, sometimes, you know, we can just have very specific questions, but I knew we were both very open to discussing anything and just, you know, real genuine stuff that could help people. So I'm very grateful for that. Thank you.
No, it's a pleasure. And I think that there's a need for this type of stuff. And not just that there's a need, there are people who like to go in depth into things. So yeah, this is why I'm doing this, and think it's very important that we do it. And I think my listeners value that. And if, at some point, it'd be great to have you back and explore some of this stuff in a bit more depth as well, or a slightly different take on it. I've got a few ideas kicking around of things in the future. So
me too. I can really feel my brain like, oh, we could talk about this.
But we'll park it there for now. But thank you very much, and wish you all the best.
Thank you. Same to you.
Bye. I hope you all enjoyed that. Stephanie is wonderful. I think we need more people like her in this world. People that share experiences and teach others from a place of honesty, authenticity, but also practicality. I mean, how many times have you ever said, you know, I wish someone would have taught me about this, that, or the other thing? Well, check out her book, Death Expands Us, and Stephanie's website. All of the links are in the show notes, as usual. And as I say, just about every other episode, or every episode, go to allthingsrisk.co.uk and click subscribe to get the All Things Risk podcast on your favorite podcast app if you've not yet done so. And if you have the time, give us a like, give us a share, or a rating or review on iTunes, or just an old-fashioned word-of-mouth endorsement. It helps us out a lot. I'm going to save my voice, so we'll sign off for now. We'll be back next week in the interim. And as always, don't forget, risk is life.